Tonight we're doing, we're on how it works on the Sunday night meeting, and we're going to go through the chapter how it works. We'll go through the four step in great detail. We go through the instructions, so if you're new and you're interested in doing a four step, this will be helpful to you. We are on tonight actually the how it works that's read at every meeting. What I have here is the original manuscript that went to the printer of the big book. The big book, for those who are new, was published in 1939, in I think April. And they sent it to the printer. It's kind of embarrassing the way they sent it, but they were alcoholics. They just crossed out things and wrote over it. And this is the original manuscript that's changed our lives. It's the textbook on recovery. It's the path to God, the treasure map to God. How it works, the chapter is not page one in the big book. It's read at every meeting. Some of the meetings, they don't read it out of the book, they read it on a card. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but sometimes people don't understand the power of these pages. How it works is page 58. The big book had 57 pages in Doctor's Opinion before you got to how it works. Why? You had to be convinced of your first and second step if you were going to go on to do the work. And they were very, very concerned about people understanding and taking the first step completely, surrendering completely, and then understanding that they needed a God of their understanding in their lives or they weren't going to make it. There was no hope for them. And so when you came to how it works, you came, if you were reading the book, from a position of complete defeat, and you were willing to go to any length to find this power to live. The chapter how it works, when Bill W. Had to put together the actual program of recovery, as I talked last week, and you listen on the site, the site's experiencethebigbook.org. It's not hard, just one word, experiencethebigbook.org. They had got to the point where he had to write the program of recovery. They had the Oxford group. He actually asked Reverend Shoemaker to write the program, but he says, I can't do it. I'm not an alcoholic. It has to come from alcoholics. They were putting together the information. The Oxford group had steps and principles. I've heard him talk. This is what he says. I assume it's true. That he used to work late at night. He would write at night around 11:30. He was going to start to write, and he just didn't know how to start the chapter. He didn't know how to write these next three pages that we're going to read. And he said that he prayed, he asked God, he had quiet time in meditation. And then if you listen to his exact words, he said the pen just flew over the paper. And within about 20 minutes, he'd written these three pages. And then he realized when he was done that he had 12 steps, and they had six in the Oxford group. And so he says this was the hand of God was actually writing these words. And when we read them tonight, you'll realize that something special is in these three pages, that it would be hard for me to believe that a human being without God's help could have written this. And so we're going to look at it from that angle. Now, I'm going to read the original manuscript that he wrote, and they changed a lot of it because you can see they really felt that we needed to make sure that the person did this program or they weren't going to make it. So it starts out, rarely have we seen a person, and read, follow it within your book and you'll see where they changed it. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail as thoroughly followed our directions. Now they crossed that out, put path. Those who do not recover, people cannot or will not completely give themselves a simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Now I'm going to go through this in detail, but I'm just going to read it now. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a way of life. And then they change that to manner of living, which demands rigorous honesty. And you can see they crossed out, and then they had somebody at the end make the initials that it was ready to go to the printer, the final copy. Their chances are less than average. There are those too suffer from grave emotional mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a journal what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. if you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go any length to get it, then you're ready to follow directions. They took that out. They take certain steps. But we're ready to follow directions. And it says, at some of these, you may balk. You may think you could find an easier, softer way. We doubt if you can. They crossed that one out. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to, but you see the tone. This is serious stuff. We have a life, we have a fatal disease. This is serious stuff. Before this was written, there was no hope for us. There was no program of recovery. Now, there may have been hope in other ways, but there wasn't this program that's saved so many lives. And the point I want to emphasize is that AA is this program, is the steps. The fellowship took its name from the program and the steps. And this book is called actually Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of people think it's just called the Big Book. But that was the name. The fellowship took its name from the book. It says, with all the earnestness at our command, we beg you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go. Absolutely. It says, remember that you are dealing with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for you. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. You must find him now! Exclamation point. Half measures will avail you nothing. You stand at the turning point. Throw yourself under his protection and care with complete abandon. Now we think you could take it! Exclamation point. They crossed that one out. But you know, it would have been good if they left it the way it is. It worked out the way it did. But it just wants you to show how with the belief and the power of the people who put this together. Here the steps we took are suggested as your program of recovery. Then they have the steps. They only changed step three. It said to over to the care and direction of God as we understood him. They took that out. On step six, we're entirely willing that God remove all these defects of character. Seven, they had humbly on your knees asked him to remove your shortcomings, holding nothing back. Then on step 10 and 11, they added, sought through prayer and meditation, improve our conscious contact with God. And then they added, as we understood him, they have a note here, Buckman, and they put notes on the side, which is really interesting, on how they made these changes. It says, having had a spiritual experience as the result of these, of this course of action, that's what they called it, we tried to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics. They took out others especially, and they put these steps. It says, many of us exclaimed, and they had you may exclaim. And then when they go to the description, they had our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after have been designed to sell you three pertinent ideas. That you are alcoholic and cannot manage your own life. That probably no human power can relieve your alcoholism. That God can and will. And then they said, could if he were sought. Now here's a line that I think they should have left in, but they didn't ask me and I wasn't alive. If you are not convinced on these vital issues, you ought to reread the book to this point or else throw it away. Now we're laughing, but there are a lot of people that you've worked with who are not convinced. And if they're not convinced, they're not gonna do the rest of the program. And so that's how it looked in the original manuscript. They changed it. They had Akron and the New York group, and they'd send the manuscripts back and forth. They only had about 40 or 50 people sober at the time the book was written, maybe 70 at the most. They said 100, but they're alcoholics. On the cover, they had one woman who showed up just before the book was published. She went on to found the National Council of Alcoholism. So we're going to look at this, these three pages, and see what it actually says. And it starts chapter 5, how it works. And the chapter to the agnostic talks about how at the end of page 57, if you can turn it over, you see how it ends, because the book, everything ties together in the big book. Does everybody have a big book? Got one there if you want. It says, seemingly, he could not drink if he would. God had restored his sanity. What is this but a miracle of healing? Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made him willing to believe. What circumstances made you willing to believe? When you come here, did anybody have circumstances that were not good? Circumstances that were not pleasant. Things didn't look good. So it made you willing. Your pain, your suffering, your humiliation. And it says, he humbly offered himself to his maker. Then he knew he had a relationship with God, which is what we're talking about. Even so, as God restored us all to our right minds, to this man the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into more slowly, but he has come to all who have honestly sought him. This is the main theme of the big book. We need a power greater than ourselves. We need a relationship with the power. And if we seek him, and how do we seek him? We work the steps, then he will reveal himself to us. So then the next chapter is, how does it work? How do we do it so that we can have a relationship with God so he can reveal himself to us so we can have a power to live? And we're not talking about not drinking anymore. We're talking now in how it works and how we get a relationship with a power to live so that alcohol is not a solution to our spiritual problem. My problem was that I couldn't live sober. I couldn't manage my own life. And managing my own life, it didn't work. And I would get angry and fearful, and I would have harmful conduct to myself and others. My emotions would not be good, and alcohol was a solution to that. It worked in the beginning, but it stopped working after a while. And in the end, we don't live too long sober. Most of us aren't sober that much at the end, because it's a continuous downhill spiral for most of us. And so it starts out, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. Now the question is, what was the path that they had when they wrote this book? Well, the book wasn't written yet, so they didn't have the book. But they had the principles in the book. I've listened to Dr. Bob. I talked about that a little bit. But there's a talk he gave in 1948 that you can get on Recovery Audio, in which Dr. Bob talks about they had the steps. They didn't have them written, but they had the principles. They had the basic outline. And this is what they did. They had a certain program for each new person. They would actually go to the hospital. People would get admitted. The sponsor in those days actually was to pay for the hospitalization. It's like $30 or something. That's what the sponsor was. He would take him to the hospital. They'd go. They'd give him one day to sober up, get his mind together. And then they had a 4 or 5 day plan of treatment. And then when they left, they went to the group. And then they took the third step in front of the group upstairs in Dr. Bob's house. And if they felt that they were really sincere, then they let them come to the meetings. It was a whole different world then. So you worked the steps before you came to the meetings. It's a different world now. So we have people come here. They know that this is a place they've heard that can help them. So we have a different way of approaching them. And they would have all the guys in the group come and talk to the new guy and then help him take the first step. And then they go through the steps in the hospital, and then they would be discharged. And Sister Ignatius and Dr. Bob in Akron, probably, they said that they helped 5,000 people before he died, and they had this plan. And they took part of the ward, and because most of these people couldn't pay, and they were able to get the hospital eventually to give them the rooms, and they helped a lot of people. But their path was not just the steps, but their path was to study the Sermon on the Mount, 1 Corinthians, and the book of James. And so you talk about AA-approved literature. I've heard that. AA-approved literature has nothing to do with what you can or cannot read at the meeting. It's not the point of it. It only has to do with what AA can put their label on and sell. They used to have the circle and the triangle they would put on their literature. They lost the copyright to it. Some legal shenanigans Who knows? But they lost the copyright. They actually don't even have the copyright for the Big Book anymore. And they, so then they put the term AA approved literature. And so at the first meeting of in Akron of AA, Dr. Bob, they all came and sat in the room, and he read from the Sermon on the Mount. So they were very spiritual. They believed in the principles of the spiritual principles in the Bible. Gary and I have been studying the Book of James, and when you study the Book of James, it is the AA program. It's how to live a spiritual life. And so their path include the steps, working with others, spiritual readings. Very big in their path was quiet time and meditation. They only had one meeting a week, but they would have quiet time, they would read a scripture, and then they would meditate on it, and then they would write out what God's guidance was, and then they would share it and talk about it. And so that's where the idea of sharing came from. They would share their guidance from God. And so that's where the term came from. A sponsor came from, if you took somebody to the Oxford group, you were considered their sponsor if you vouched for them when they came to the group, that you were, that they were serious about this and they really wanted to get help. It says, and how do you fail to thoroughly follow the path? Really seeing a person fail is thoroughly follow their path. Well, they're talking about following the specific directions which they're going to outline, and you heard the way they wrote this. So they believe if you do what they did, you'll have what they had. And they had a program of where they could recover from a hopeless condition of mind and body. And so they felt very strongly. I think you can thoroughly follow the path for years and then fail when you stop doing it. So I think to thoroughly follow your path is to continually thoroughly follow the path. So it would, you could say, really, have we seen a person, we've never seen a person fail who continues to thoroughly follow the path. But they didn't want any absolutes because then we would try to prove them wrong. And then they used this word, those who do not recover. They used the word recover in the Big Book. And we talk about recovering or recovery. But they used the term recover. Now, what they meant by recover was that they had a power in their life that could help them see the truth about alcohol so they didn't have to drink. And that power came from what they called God, their higher power. And you can be recovered as long as you're in fit spiritual condition. But if you're not in fit spiritual condition, then you're sober without God and you have no defense against alcoholism. So alcohol was not the problem. Alcohol was the solution for not having a power in your life to live a spiritual life, and then your life became a mess, and then alcohol seemed like a good idea. What had happened to me, I don't know about you, but alcoholics learned in the beginning of their lives that if they drank, life would look better. Things got better, and the world changed, and we didn't like the way the world was. So our mind said, whenever anything was going on, we should get a drink or take a pill. And the problem with that is it stops working. And it takes over our lives because of the obsession of the mind. And we can't quit using or drinking because our mind won't tell us it's wrong to drink or use if we decide to. We have no barrier when I decide that I'm going to drink or use. I have no barrier on my own. Willpower will not work. You can will yourself into the bar. Willpower won't work. Why? Because you can't see the truth right before you drink. You only see the effect it's going to have on you. Any addicts in here? Any alcoholics? Right before you drank, you couldn't recall the promises, the oaths and the mourning, the DUIs, the humiliation, the defeat. All you could think about is what it's going to do for you, not to you. And somebody says when there's a battle between the emotions and the intellect, the emotions always win. And we are emotional people. Because if we lived the self-centered life. And says, so recovery to them was where they had a relationship with this power that could help them see the truth. So those who don't recover, and notice how they started out. Who's not going to follow the path? Well, they're not going to recover. And those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not give themselves this simple program. Oh, there's a new word in there. Completely. Cannot or will not completely give themselves to this program. Now, it doesn't say the fellowship. It doesn't say going to meetings. AA is has two parts to it now, fellowship and program. They're both important, but we've gotten away from the program, and fellowship's very strong. Being part of the fellowship will not help you recover unless you do the program too. And so this is about the program, because the program is how you get to God. In fellowship, you have support, and you have a common problem, and you share the support of people going through a common problem, but they get the power to recover from God. So they cannot or will not give themselves completely to the simple program. And it says, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. So what does that mean? It sounds really complicated. Constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself. Well, I've heard meetings where people discuss what constitutionally means and this and that. I like the idea, it says on page 25, where it says, there's a solution. If you can turn to that. And they talk about the solution. This is the first time it's presented. They talk about that the self-searching, everybody see that paragraph at the top? Self-searching, leveling my pride, confessing its shortcomings, which the process requires for successful consummation. And we saw that it really worked in others. So I think people who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves are those who cannot come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as they've been living it. If you can't believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as you've been living it, you're not going to work the steps. And I think alcoholics can live pretty miserable lives, and their lives can be really a mess, and they still have a plan. They still think that they can figure this out. Anybody met people like that? And they're not willing to completely surrender to the idea that their life is hopeless and futile as they've been living it. They can no longer live it the same way. I've got to change. Because it says, when therefore these people are approached, there's nothing left for them but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools. So to go back to how it works, you're not going to pick up the spiritual toolkit that's in these steps unless you can see the hopelessness and futility of life as you're living it. Now, how do you get to see the hopelessness and futility of life as you're living it? Well, you have to be able to see the truth at some point. And I think everybody in this room must have seen the truth at one point or you wouldn't be here. And there are alcoholics who can never see this. They can never see the truth that they can't fix this. They cannot manage their own lives. They can never stop drinking. And so I think it's a gift from God to be able to see the truth. And there are some people who cannot or will not, they're not able to be honest with themselves. And the thing is, you can't make them be honest with themselves. We have no power to make somebody else admit complete defeat. We don't have that. It's frustrating because everybody in this room would like to see everybody have what we have and do what we do. But unless they're capable of seeing the truth and that they need this, they're not going to do it. And if you've worked with people and tried to help people, you'll see it time after time again. They become very willing in the beginning, and then their life becomes a little bit less hopeless and less futile as the days go on. They get the car back, or they get a place to live, or they get a job, and their ego rebuilds, and they're not completely defeated. So it's interesting the way they put it. You cannot or will not completely give themselves this simple program. And they talk about honesty three times in this first paragraph. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. This is how they explained what we see all the time, where somebody can't admit defeat. And we don't understand why they just can't see the hopelessness and futility of their situation. And they just can't say, I'm done. And they may have been born that way. They just didn't know how to explain this. So they use the word constitutionally incapable, maybe have been born that way. And here they say, incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. This word, rigorous honesty. And how do you, what are they talking about? Driving at the speed limit? I think they're talking about a way of life in which you can see the truth about your thinking, and you can see how your thinking is wrong, and you can see your need for God to correct your thinking, and how your resentments and your anger and the way you blame others for things that have happened to you are not true. and that you want to see things the way God sees them. And the manner of living is this way of life, which is a spiritual way of life outlined in the steps. And in step 10, when you're in the world of the Spirit, when you've gone to step 10, you should have had a conscious contact with God. And it says then you're able to see the truth about things. And it says when you're wrong, promptly admit your mistakes. Anybody see that up on the board? Step 10, continue to take personal inventory when you're wrong. Well, it might be I'm wrong, I was wrong in an argument, I was wrong in a certain thing, but I think what it works for me is to admit when I'm wrong in my thinking, when my thinking's wrong, when my thinking's self-centered, when I'm back into fear and selfishness and dishonesty and self-seeking and I'm intolerant and being judgmental and I'm full of fear and I'm harming others. I have to see the truth about that so I don't act on that anymore. And on Wednesday night, we're going to be looking at 6 and 7, is which we see that personality, and we don't want to be that person anymore, and how we practice the new way of living. It says their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. And if you notice, I ask God to help me set aside everything I think I know in my set-aside prayer before we said the serenity prayer. I have to be able to be honest about my motives, honest about my thinking, honest about my directions, and I can't do that on my own. I need God's help. And so on my own, I can't see the truth about things. And so this whole program is how you see the truth with God. And so then you can make decisions based on truth and not on lies. And the capacity to be honest means, are you willing to let go of your old ideas? They're going to talk about that in a few minutes. So that's just some thoughts on that paragraph. I'm going to read one more. And it says our stories, there's stories in the back of the book. The stories were put in the back of the book for several reasons. One, the Salvation Army had a book that they really liked, and it was very big, and it had all these stories of witnessing, how people's lives changed. So they wanted to have a big book so that people would buy it. And in fact, they made the original big book. It's called a big book because it's really, the print, the pages are thick. It's a little bit larger than the normal size. And they wanted something that people would see. They were salesmen. They wanted to sell this book to people because they thought it offered the chance for to save their lives. And so they put stories in the back. I think they had, I don't know how many they had originally. They were written by a guy who they sobered up. He was sober about 6 months, and he was a writer in Akron. They sobered him up. And then he would talk to the guys, and he would write their stories. So the original stories were actually written. He transposed what they did so that it would they're all very well written if you've seen the original stories. I think there are like 12 or 14 of them. And it's supposed to be what was like, what happened, and what changed them. They wrote the stories in the back of the book so people will read it and identify and then want to do this thing. And so there's some groups that read all the stories. I mean, they're like 40 stories. It's 40 weeks. But they're really, it's supposed to help people take the first step. It's supposed to help people identify and want to do this so that their lives will change. It says, if you have decided you want what we have, now how do you make a decision to want what they have? Well, you have to know what they had, right? And they've spent 57 pages of Doctor's Opinion telling what they had. And they tell you in the foreword to this first edition, it's a very subtle statement. I think we'll read it. If you can go to your book and go to the foreword to the first edition. It's on page XIII. I don't know why it couldn't be page 3, but they changed the numbers. They took the doctor's opinion, which was page 1, they made it Roman numerals. It says, this is what we had. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. So that was the purpose of this book. And they felt that if you had a hopeless state of mind and body and you did what's in this book, you would recover. So this is what they had. They were going to call the big book, we'll go back to page 58 now. They were going to call it The Way Out, but there were too many way outs. And so they settled on the name Alcoholics Anonymous. There was a man who came, and he was a newspaper publisher or a magazine publisher, but he had pretty bad wet brain. And I heard the story. It's I don't know if it's true, but the guy said he was there. That the man came and he said you should call this Anonymous Alcoholics. And then they liked that idea. Now that man never came back to another meeting, but that's where we got the name from. So if you want what they had a way out, a way of living, which gave them solved their problem. And you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So you have to decide, do you want what they have? Now, when you come in AA today, how do you decide? You see people who have done the deal. You see, they'll tell you how their lives have changed. You get someone and they tell you what it was like for them and what it is now and what they did. And then if you want what they have, you'll be willing to do whatever they did. And this book is to show you exactly what they did. And then if you do it, then you'll have a result that you tell somebody else. So AA doesn't tell you the result. It tells you, do an experiment. Your life is an effing mess. You can't stay sober. You can't stop using. You can't manage your own life. Give up your plan and try this plan. Now do the plan. Do it completely, as they said, and then tell us the result. And then so they're telling you, do an experiment. Give up on your plan, try this, and tell us if it works. Now, why do you decide you want what they have and really go any length to get it when you finally give up on your plan? Nobody comes in here and says, I want to work the steps. I want to read this book and take me through the steps. Nobody comes up the first meeting. Most people don't even understand what AA is all about in the beginning, and we have to explain it to them. But after a while, we want them to know that we have a plan. We have a plan of recovery for them that if they do, look at the result. It worked for me. And then we're supposed to take them down the path, hand by hand, the path that I took, I'm supposed to take them, then they do it, then they take somebody else. And that's how we got here today. Bill and Bob went to AA number 3, they went to 4 and 5, they got someone else, they got somebody from Cleveland, they went back to New York, and slowly, there were enough people. There may be more people in the room now that are sober than were when they wrote the big book. And yet it's here today. It worked. This is God's plan for us. So if you decide you want what they have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, now any length means any length. It doesn't mean what you think you need. And how do you know what any length is? Well, they're going to tell you what any length is. I've heard some people, they come up to me, they're willing to go to any length to get it, but they can't come Tuesday night. I say, I'll meet you Tuesday night. No, I can't come. I got bowling. You know, and so it's really willing to go to any length to get it, willing to do anything. It says then you're ready to take certain steps. So the steps are what they want you to do, and you have to be completely willing. Now, if you're not completely willing, you're not going to do it. Now, how do you know if you're sitting in the room today, if you're willing to go to any length? What did you do today for recovery? What are you doing? Where are you in the steps? Are you working with other people? Are you praying and meditating? Are you doing inventory? You see, you can answer those questions for yourself. And it says, we'll do one more paragraph, we'll quit. It says that some of these we balked. What a shock. We thought we could find an easier, softer way. Does that sound like anything you've thought? A lot of people come in here and say, boy, they're pretty serious about this stuff. He won't shut up about God. He wants me to do these steps. Oh, my God. Has to be another way to do it. And so it says, but we could not, because they tried everything. This is the last stop on the train tracks for most of you. And so it says, we could not, with all the earnestness at our command, with everything that they could tell you, they beg us to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Now, I think this is the paragraph why people die, because you have to be willing to get rid of all of your old ideas And if you don't, you're not going to have any results. Now, what's an old idea? Well, an old idea for me is anything I thought I knew that was true when I came in here. Because I didn't realize it, but I was wrong about everything. I saw the world wrong. And I have to be willing to let go of my old ideas today. Anything that I think I'm sure of, anything I think I'm certain of, is an old idea. We have to be open-minded and willing and be able to look at our thinking and see if it's true or not. And that's what AA is all about. We look at our old ideas and we discard the ones that aren't true. This man, Chuck C., says, what we do is uncover, discover, and discard all those things about me that aren't God. My old ideas are all my plans for myself, what I thought I needed to be happy, how I saw the world, how I was going to manage it. And I was seeing it wrong. So, of course, the world wasn't going the way I liked, and things weren't working out, and I get angry and fearful and harm people. Anybody relate to any of that? So our old ideas are constantly being revealed to me. I had an old idea revealed yesterday. John asked me something, and I said, he asked me why to do it. I said, well, it was probably an old idea. So then I thought about it. Now when anybody asks me anything that I think I don't want to do, I know I need to do it. And so it always works out. So we're reading To Wives. I didn't do it for years because I didn't think To Wives was really part of the directions, because Joe and Charlie said it wasn't. Somebody said to me, well, why don't you do it? Why don't we cover it? It's in the book. I said, okay, changed my mind, and it's been great. So I find, I don't know about you, if you've ever had a book that you thought you weren't going to like, and then you read it's the best book or the movie. I had the Joe and Charlie tape sitting there for years, and I didn't think I could learn anything from Joe and Charlie from Arkansas, for God's sakes. It sounded like a hillbilly band or something. And they're Joe and Charlie. What could they teach me? I mean, I'm Michael the Magnificent. And anyway, so when I finally listened to them, they changed my life. So we're going to pick up with the end of this paragraph next week, okay?